Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And if there's something I'm always fascinated in, it's the work of matchmakers who can add a personal touch in a world increasingly matched by algorithms. Plus, the matchmaking service we are exploring today is distinctive for taking into account sexual compatibility within their singles. Here to share more, it's founder Orsa Borv and their co-director, Sarah Louise Ryan.
Hello, and thank you so much for having us. And I was smiling throughout as you were talking about, you know, it's increasing around algorithms, but matchmaking is so different. So we're so happy to be here today.
Yes.
Very excited to be here.
Thank you. You've already reminded me of a conversation I had not long ago where a guest was saying how, you know, we can be so distrustful sometimes of matchmaking or of like assisted marriages and basically other people getting involved in how we find love and kind of how delicate these matches can be. And yet we can put so much faith in algorithms that we will let a bot match us because we're in a time when that's so normalized.
Yes, it's a conversation we have often of really also, we have a lot of missions and deep desires to bring to the world. And one of them is to really normalize matchmaking because in effect, it's you seeking experts in a field which is so normalized in like personal training, nutrition, business, clothing, you know, you can interior design. I can literally sit here all day where people would reach out to experts, but somehow when it's about our dating life, you know, we make it mean so much about what does it mean about me and, you know, what is this process? Because, you know, it's a beautiful element to bring highly compatible people together, but not everyone knows about it because online dating and, of course, dating apps is so accessible. So somewhere it's been like muddled in the water. Oh, what is it? Oh. Yeah, as you say, do we trust it? This seems very like mystical, but actually it's really beautiful.
Yeah, no, I think mystical is the word. It's something that I think we do prize so highly, this idea of people that really know about relationships. And I think often that can come from us feeling like everybody but us has their like relationship outlook together. And maybe that's part of the insecurity that can explain this. Like, do you find a lot of clients come to you and they're maybe holding back from reaching out for professional support, meeting someone because of like, oh, does this mean there's something inadequate about me that I think I need this support?
I wanted to jump in and scale it back to something that you were saying about dating apps and then also answer your question, is that when, well, of course, like also said, dating apps are free and they're accessible most of the time. So it's the lack of knowledge that there is still traditional matchmakers working with a modern twist in the way that we do at Taylor Match, but also, so when people are, singles are accessing these apps, they then get hooked in by the gamification, which is more than the algorithm, the way the app itself is built. And so whilst they often feel like it isn't serving them, they don't know how to stop. It becomes like a part of routine. And actually some information came out this week that on average, singles are spending 10 hours a week swiping left, right, up and down. Can you believe that? So there's two sides of it. There's the getting hooked into an app that's built to essentially monetize on keeping people in there, so keeping them single. And then the other side of it is not knowing what's out there. Moreover, not wanting to find the support, because I think the more we shout about what we do at Taylor Matched and the matchmaking industry as a whole, taking people offline, the more people will know that there's more to dating than just apps.
Yeah. And that's something that I think can be a like common misconception, that that is the only way that people are meeting. And then it only takes kind of looking through your friends and people that you know that have got married, and so often they are meeting at work or they're meeting through mutual friends and all these ways that have been around for a long, long time, but the apps are so there. And I think particularly if you're putting in those hours, because I mentioned like the insecurity we can have around like whether or not we're good at dating and whether or not it's a necessity to be great at relationships in order to have one. And I don't necessarily think it is. As long as we're good at the relationships that we're in, there's not a need to be good at relationships in general. And maybe that's a lot more achievable. But also perhaps this insecurity can come in with the apps as well, where I think all of us can think of friends that go on loads of dates from Tinder and the like, and they may be open about that, but maybe they wouldn't be as open about how much time goes into the swiping to set up that many dates.
I think that if somebody approaches dating with the idea that they want to be good at all relationships rather than the one that they're in, they're basically saying that they want to be everything to all people. You know, the ones that fit together are co-creating something. If you want to be good at all relationships, it's like there's a loss of self there, perhaps.
No, I can definitely see that. And also, would you mind at this point sharing the dating story that you have locked and loaded, and we'll kind of get a bit of a contrast of your own journey of understanding dating relationships better?
Yeah, you know, I always start with this. When I was in a relationship and my friends were single, I was the first one to be like, come on, girls, just have a glass of wine and let's do some swiping. Look at this guy with his dog. How cute. Then when I became single and it was about my life, lo and behold, priorities changed. And I thought, how on earth am I going to navigate online dating and dating apps while having my job? You know, I used to run one of the largest PR agencies in the country. How am I going to do my job, have my life, and run, you know, a dating life as well on online dating apps? So that was like the first nudge to be like, okay, when it's about my life and my time, priorities very quickly changed. I've always been about meeting offline, in person. So one of the reasons why we do online dating events, even though it's a small part of what it is that we do, it started with my personal journey of going to a lot of speed dating. I thought, how can I meet lots of people in a short amount of time to just like gauge compatibility and see who's who? I realized very, very quickly that I'm Swedish. I'm not one for small talk, never been, you know, never will be. And I engaged very quickly that people was like, how did you travel here? You know, Central Line is such a pain, isn't it? It's super warm in the summer. And it was this particular guy who I think had a lot of things going for him, and he didn't know how to navigate the conversation and ended up speaking about his story about seagulls in Brighton. And it wasn't even like a particularly good story. And I thought, what on earth is happening in this room? There is like really capable, you know, really lovely, kind, outgoing people who are just speaking about the Central Line, some seagull story. And I've just like observed what was happening. You know, he's obviously, as you move through the room, right, you know, he always followed me. So I was like, oh my God, this guy is using the same seagull story over and over again. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I actually changed number with the man who ran the whole event. So I thought, I'm just going to go to the main guy here and just like go on a date with him. So I just cut it short as I would normally do. But it was just like one of many situations where I found myself, wow, when single people are in a room, it's actually very hard for them to know what to talk about, you know, what to put first as such in conversation, and how to bring their most confident, authentic self. And who want to talk about the Central Line? You know, please, I don't want to speak about it. So actually at Taylor Match, that's just like one of many stories that I have, but it's just like, how can I bring my most authentic self to my dating life? And this is why when we do, even though it's a small portion of the online dating, it's like, we have very specific, like, okay, we want to do this. This is about kinky speed dating, or meet a dom if you're a submissive, or here's a conversation starter card so that you can really speak about something that fires you up, you know? And that was really an observation. It was just extremely hard to navigate dating as single, and just seeing all these incredible people just like, I don't know what the English word is, just like falling apart in front of another single. And I was like, wow. You know, so yeah, the seagull, I really felt for him. He just didn't know what to talk about. And every time, 12 dates about his seagull story, basically, for him.
God, and I'm amazed he wasn't just bored out of his mind telling it, but maybe he was, you know, surely by the 12th time, you were not telling it well.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, oh God, I really hope that, you know, I had a much better spin, or that it was just something that was just so connected to his identity, or maybe he was like a bird watcher or something. But at the time when he telling me, I just thought, I just can't believe that this is what you're talking about. But, you know, of course, being so compassionate and just really sitting, listening, you know. So it's been, yeah, it was a few days where I'm just like, God, people don't, you know, it's hard for them to bring out what to talk about and what to connect over unless it's like, you know, like also when I went, this is not really like a one-on-one date, but when I started going to sex parties, and I really wanted to immerse myself in a sex positive community that was about who you were and like your sexual self, because I've always been really into sex. It was just that I'd like deeply suppressed it for many, many years. But eventually I went, and I remember this girl I was speaking to, and she was like, oh, you know, hi, how are you doing? You know, what are you into? Like, what did you say? Not what are you into? What do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a commercial director. She was like, no, I mean, what are you into in the bedroom? And I was like, oh, yes, I have arrived. Here is my people. They don't want to know about my job title. You know, so there's so many things that just happened where it's like, I don't enjoy this environment. I enjoy this environment. How can I kind of create a community that can just speak about what they not do for work and not about seagulls, basically, just about something fun, cool, authentic.
Yes, I love that. And it can be sort of strangely formal at times, that we can really get our walls up when it comes to dating and resist that kind of vulnerability that's required of, we want the other person to be vulnerable. We want to get to know them really quickly, but it can take a bit of work to get comfortable doing that ourselves. And Sarah, was that something that you came across in your dating past, where people were coming on a date and they were getting so kind of distracted by how they come across that it can actually prevent them connecting with you?
Similarly to also, I haven't had loads of terrible dates, but I certainly have found in my single life people not knowing how to, it was almost like honestly, authentically communicate themselves. They get so wrapped up in the thought of how they're being perceived or accepted or rejected by somebody else that they lose themselves. So I guess I've always been on a journey of self-development through my 20s and 30s, quite lucky to have started that journey early. So I feel like from quite a young age, I've known myself. We're all still a work in progress. But when I was going on dates, I wasn't like, you know, being super directive, but being quite sure, self-aware of who I am and communicating it quite well. But I found that people were, it was like an implosion, watching lots of implosions where, like horses say, they lose themselves in their words, either through nerves or, you know, waiting for like almost like an acceptance to click in or a rejection to happen. Like people navigate dating with so much fear of rejection that they then either, there's like lots of silence through fear of speaking or stumbling over words and just going off on a tangent that isn't relevant or connecting. And like, you know, from a doctor that would talk about his, you know, how desensitized he was. I mean, that's not what I want to hear when I'm into connection and deep communication. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, oh gosh, that's not for me. I mean, is that even okay to communicate that you're so desensitized by your work? And yeah, just people losing etiquette. And I think what it boils down to for me is that people don't know how to flirt. They don't know how to authentically be themselves or playful or enjoy the experience in the moment with another human being. And that comes with, I guess it comes with confidence, it comes with self-awareness and assurance, but also like owning like, yeah, your flirting game. People have forgotten it. And I think post-pandemic, even more so, because of all of the disconnection we've experienced over the last couple of years. Yeah. So I think I was thinking about Orsa's play parties. I mean, people are just flirting left, right and centre. No wonder there was so much authenticity in the room.
Yes. Yeah. And that comfort of being in a place where you're meant to be putting yourself out there to that extent. You know, that's a requirement of being in the space, I think, can really free people up. And it's funny what you said about the doctor. I think there's definitely some points there, because it's just as an example of how this doesn't work, that we can get so in our head about how we're coming across, being really careful about what we say. And yet, absolutely, I've been on loads of those dates too, where people just come out with some of their biggest insecurities or their red flags that surely would be the kind of thing they'd not be saying, but we can get sort of so in our head that it no longer follows logic. And they're like, quick, say anything. There's a silence. Just throw anything at this person.
Bobby, I wanted to say then, I think that we go on dates, like, I say we, as though we're still single, but we speak to singles all the time also. So, you know, it's like, you know, we're part of the dating scene, but not actually. You know, going on dates, it's like there's so much pressure to have that instantaneous connection like yesterday that singles aren't really thinking about the experience that they're creating in that moment. They're thinking about marriage and babies and deep connection straight away rather than just the now. And so the pressure becomes like a cooker and it's like boiling over. And so they don't know what to do.
Yes. And I'm always encouraging people that really the first date, the focus and the bar should be, would I go on a second date with this person? Like, that's actually all you need to decide at that point. And yet, like you say, even though we may not always admit it, it's very easy for your mind to go to those end games. And it's partly understandable within the context of monogamy of like, okay, I can only choose one of these people, so they've got to tick so many boxes, but there is plenty of time to get through that stuff. And there is no guarantee that someone's being themselves on a first date anyway. And also, I wanted to ask you about flirting, because I think there can be sort of a lot of stereotypes around Scandinavian people, whether it's to do with better sex education or a more kind of sex positive attitude that can exist generally.
I would say we're very good at flirting. Actually, we are. Sweden was one of the first countries in Europe or the world who had mandatory sex education in schools. It's still mandatory. And am I right in that it's not mandatory in the UK, or for a period of time it was not mandatory?
I believe it's not. So it's down to schools have to consult on it, but they don't have to teach most of it. And so usually they do, but certain schools, depending on like religious context or if they have particularly aggressive parents, there can be situations where it's not taught. But at least some parts like menstruation, I believe, have to be taught.
Yeah.
For context also, I had sex education in school. Is here's what sex is. Here's how not to get pregnant. And here's how to deal with a period. The end. That was it.
Yes, I hear you. And it's like, and I thought I'll start with this, because, you know, being flirty starts way before the moment where we want to engage in some flirty, playful banter or vibes or energy, whatever you feel called to call it. You know, a lot of that we speak about over at Taylor Mash, and also why we have a big educational hub, is to really help people to connect with the most authentic self. Like, what is holding you back from really stepping into your sexual power? What do you even make sexual power mean? Is it something that excites you, or do you get scared of what is it even? What are other people going to think? Or what I think back when I was in my 20s, if I was in my sexual power, I would never meet a man who wanted to connect with me, or wanted to commit to me, or God forbid, marry me or have children. So I always was like scaling back. There was so much shame. And even this is why I'm big on Tantra, why we're also like big on meditating and grounding, because it's like when we're in our head and thinking, who should I be? What's acceptable? What can I say? What are they going to think? How is the world and, you know, everybody going to judge me? We're just in our head. We're just in our mind just thinking thousands of thoughts, and it just doesn't feel grounded. It doesn't feel like it's authentic and just like this is, it doesn't feel like it's an extension of you, because it's the opposite of, we touched upon fear so many times already, and this is something that comes up over and over and over again. So it's because the flirting and the erotic energy and the sexual energy is all an extension of ourselves. You know, before we kind of dare to extend it, we need to accept it. And this is something that we see a lot in, you know, not to say like all women and all men, I just find that a lot of the conversations have been around generally women may feel that if I have a sexual self and I'm standing in my sexual power, people are going to think I'm a slut. I just, you know, fuck lots of people and I'm not serious, or I'm not going to be a serious contender for like a committed relationship. And men can often feel very fearful of, if I bring my most authentic self and, you know, stepping into my sexual power, am I going to come across as sleazy? Am I going to offend them? You know, they come from a place so that this is authentic, kind, and they want the woman's experience to be beautiful and safe. But they're just like, what about if they, if I come across like it's not? What about if this is misunderstood and now I'm falling into the camp of the men who are not wanting to have the playful, safe environment, if that makes sense? So before we know it, you know, you're back in your head and you're second guessing yourself and everyone around you.
Yes, and I guess I see a lot of that with, like you say, comfort, and when people aren't comfortable with themselves or they have things to work through, I think there's a certain necessity to know what's attractive about you in order to put that forward.
Yeah, exactly. It's like so often when we run events and when we're having conversation, it's like so many people can come and ask like, but what do women want? And what do men want? But what should I do in here? And if she or he is into this or not into that, or if this is their profession, what would be their ideal partner? And, you know, yeah, by all means, think about another person's experience. But before that, as you rightly point out, you must come first, of just like really honoring and celebrating and loving the fuck out of yourself and what you look like, what you stand for, what you bring to this world. And this is gonna like ooze, you know, a completely different energy and vibe when you're speaking to someone, and just like coming from like love, not ego, but, you know, and this is what I bring, and, you know, I'm looking forward to bringing someone who brings their authentic self. And I remember when my partner, who was doing an Instagram live, he's a men's coach, and he was having an interview with someone, and I just overheard him because he was locked down and we were just like in our flat 24/7 like everybody. And I just overheard him, and he was like, you know, I really believe that women are in abundance to me. And my ego was like, what on earth is this man sitting saying in the living room? Who are these other women? But then I thought, okay, why did that kind of trigger me? Why do I feel uncomfortable? And then when I looked at my own journey, well, what's the alternative? Is to think that I would be the only right woman for him. I'm the only one who could ever be a good match to him. Well, that creates the, like, my partner on a pedestal and people pleasing and all sorts of toxic traits. So the healthy is to just like, this is who I am. I'm believing what I want is in abundance to me, and I choose the person I'm with. And it's to trust that. It was just very interesting how, even as an educator, you know, I teach people in this space, but I'm only human. But it was just like how quickly my ego grabbed hold of that thing. What is this woman who are in abundance to him? But then I thought, of course, I believe that men are in abundance to me. I choose my partner, though, you know, to be committed to him and choose him every day. So it's just like, again, like ego, fear, overthinking, who should I be to fit in and how what I want, basically.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, could you share a little bit about the onboarding process? So working with new clients and finding out about what they are looking for in terms of sexual relationships, and how you kind of find out, okay, what is the truth? What is the ego?
Absolutely. I felt a little kind of like skipping a dance when you asked me that question, because it's really my favorite part of what we do, meeting all of the singles. Like also said, we don't do small talk. I mean, not at all. So the onboarding process is really fun. It's informative, it's informal, but I'm getting inquiries from all over at the moment. Gosh, different continents at the moment, for sure. We're still kind of navigating that and figuring it out. But with a big concentrate in London, you know, busy single professionals who are, high achieving, but they are conscious, they're self-aware, they're investing in themselves, they're investing in their development, and they want to know more about themselves, but connect with people on the same journey as them as well. And so every single that inquires with us, we either meet them in person or via Zoom, and we get to know them better. We, you know, I often sit with a cup of tea, just trying to understand their dating journey so far. You know, what have they experienced? What have they learned about themselves? What do they know hasn't served them so far in dating, in relationships? Who do they identify as today, and what makes them feel deeply connected to another human being. People reflect ourselves back to us. So we find out what they've learned on the dating journey, and they fill out something we call a suitability profile. We romanticize it a little bit. Who is your ideal partner? What would they be doing? Where would they be right now? What do they value intellectually, emotionally? Where are they at spiritually? And of course, the only matchmaking agency to be doing this, trailblazing the way, what do they want sexually? We want to know about your, you know, we don't yuck a single yum. We want to know everything. You know, we leave no stone left unturned. And we want to know kinks, fetishes, power plays. So we look at all sexual preferences, but most of all, we really value singles that want a committed relationship. And we're not like an app or a swiping mechanism like a website or anything like that. We're pretty old school in the way we work, but modern in what we're considering to work with. No photos, none of that. It's real old school human beings taking a decision based on what you've shared with your deep compatibility and bringing singles together. And more often than not, you know, they really value someone else doing the legwork, asking all of the nitty-gritty questions about, you know, values, family orientation, non-negotiables, logistics, because they're really high-flying. And then they just show up on a date and check in on the chemistry and feed back to us what I often call the good, the bad and the ugly of how things went.
I love that. And I wanted to ask as well, also, how do you drill down into kind of what people are saying in terms of particularly like sexual interests, of what they're kind of curious about versus what is kind of lived in preferences? Because I certainly noticed for me and a lot of friends of mine that the people that are kind of most upfront through dating about kind of kinks and things that they want to explore don't necessarily correlate with people that have kind of the experience or maybe even confidence to explore those things or know that they actually like them.
So because the process starts by having a conversation, you get a gauge for their exploration, you know, their appetite, they might, you know, because it's a very safe and open-minded space for them to step in and, you know, speak about what may have been suppressed before or it hasn't been welcomed in certain ways. So already we can start to gauge, okay, they have a desire. They might go, okay, actually, I just realized I don't really know what I want. My whole sex life have been about pleasing other people to a point where it was like beyond what I actually was okay with or what I wanted. So now I'm gonna do X, Y, Z. So you kind of get a feel. This is also translated to the suitability profile, whereby we ask in terms of sexual exploration. The process is a vetting process in itself, and then it's just like inviting them to share. And most people, they are sharing away, and sometimes they're like, oh, hang on, this is the first time I meet you. Why did I tell you? I don't normally tell people. And we're like, it's okay. You know, you're safe here. And they were like, oh man, this feels good.
Like, good. And I think there's such a lovely balance of that as well, to have the ability to kind of share and have a confidence that you guys are taking all this into account, but not, you know, doing that within the dates themselves. So you can do a lot of the filtering for somebody rather than they may have things that they really want to talk about, but aren't necessarily things that make sense to talking about early on in dating. So yeah, it's I love your job. Like, I would sit here all day and ask you about your role, but unfortunately we are coming near the end of our time, so we will wrap up with our rules of the game. So is there something that you try and live by in dating and relationships that you'd recommend? And we'll go with Sarah first.
Deeply connecting, and that comes with consistent, authentic communication. That's it. Inside and outside the bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Love that. For me, you know, one thing that I really learned is really to celebrate your partner. Is to celebrate yourself, is also to celebrate your partner. And you can celebrate your partner in all different areas. And one conversation that me and my partner often share is that before we met, or when we were in our dating journeys and eventually connected, we had made a conscious decision to ourselves that I want to show up as all of me in my next relationship, because in the past, my partners have felt fear if I stand in my power. They've been like, oh my God, what do I make this mean about myself? I'm going to lose them, which is not nice on the receiving end. So we had both, as it happens, made a conscious decision to just like, we're going to show up as all of us. And the hard part is to let your partner do the same. So when you feel fear for they are going to go on this personal development journey, or they're going to like massively grow, or they're going to do a thing, which is all of them, none me, but I'm going to completely support them and celebrate them for who they are, and just trust that your partner comes back to you and that they choose you and that you choose each other. I think that's something that, well, I know it's something that I really live by, you know, when it's easy breezy and I'm like, yay, this is what I do and this is what my partner is doing, what is everyone should doing, and also when I'm triggered to just like, this feels difficult for me, I am in my fear of everything going bad, that's my fear though, how do I wanna choose to show up, and I'm gonna commit to celebrate yourself and your partner as the individuals that you are, as much as you also celebrate each other in the relationship.
Yes, points for that. And I think I'll add one that kind of links to some of what we've been talking about today of authenticity within dating and how there can be such a lacking of that. And I would say I've been reminded in dating a bit more than usual lately how unreliable people can be at describing themselves. That's a big part of the dating process is sharing who you are. But all of us, myself included, can be very unreliable, particularly in those early dates on kind of sharing who you actually are. And so don't ignore your kind of intuition of taking into account context clues. And I think that can help with making genuine connections and putting that person at ease rather than trying to connect with a persona that may or may not turn out to be real.
Nice.
I love that. Yeah, and just acknowledging what's there, you know, it's okay to be nervous. Let's just say, oh, I feel a little bit nervous, and then it's out, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really easy tip right there. If you think that person is nervous, say that you are, irrespective of whether you are or not, because they feel like they can vocalize it, everyone relaxes a little bit more. And so on that note, we will wrap up, but do share with me and the listeners, where can people find this service and reach out to you guys if they're interested?
You can find us on Instagram at TaylorMatched, or you can find us to make an inquiry for any info about matchmaking at TaylorMatched.com. And we'll get back to you.
And we will be back with a little bit more chat for our Apple Podcast subscribers in a moment. But for now, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Loved it.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.